Hello, welcome to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. I'm here with my two co-hosts today, which is very exciting to have them back this week, Matt Spaeth and Susan Wright.
Good to be back.
Great to be back.
We have an amazing guest today. We have the four-time best-selling author of the book, The China Study, Dr. Colin Campbell, who co-authored this with his son, Thomas Campbell. Welcome, Dr. Campbell. Oh, I understand he's not on the line yet. I got a little confused there. So if you haven't read this book, it's quite amazing. It's probably one of the most nutritional studies ever done on the correlation between various diseases and the food we eat. And I'm going to go check and see where our guest is real quickly, and I'll turn it over to Matt.
So let's talk about the GMO salmon. The FDA, a little update on that. The FDA has heard the public hearings, and now it is going to the internal, and it's basically up to them. The public has said their say, and we should hear sometime within the next 2 years whether we're going to be eating fragment fish or not. What do you think about that, Susan?
I don't like it at all. I love fish, so this is not very happy news to me. And some of the long-term ramifications of that is that apparently 2% of these genetically engineered salmon can reproduce, so this could possibly affect all of the salmon. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, the company states that it's between 1 and 5% of the salmon that are supposed to be all sterile will actually have the ability to reproduce. So it's not set in stone. It kind of fluctuates. And when you look at the statistics of how many farm-raised salmon escape a year, it's quite shocking. I think it was in the millions last year. And they're saying that they're going to require that these genetically engineered salmon would only be farmed inland. And, you know, that would probably work, but how do you enforce that?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense that that they would go ahead and approve something like this without, again, safety measures or making sure that something is foolproof. But we've seen examples of that recently in other areas.
Yeah, you know.
And the effects.
Yeah, the FDA is kind of in a position of make a decision and see how it turns out.
Yeah.
But in other news, there was a news article that came out recently about the USDA considering changing the certification of organic to allow genetically modified foods to be in the organic certification.
That's interesting.
Well, I understand that Dr. Campbell is on the line. Dr. Campbell, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm going to reintroduce you. Dr. Campbell, along with his son, Thomas Campbell, are the author of the four-time best-selling book, The China Study, which is one of the most comprehensive studies ever done about nutrition and disease. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Pleasure.
Yes. So, Dr. Campbell, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about, this is kind of a two-part question, what made you decide to write this book? And I know this is kind of a big topic to you to give a brief discussion on, but tell us what the China Study is.
Well, I guess I should go back to first point out that I got into medical research, if you will, starting in 1956, over half a century ago, and spent most of my time at Cornell University on faculty. Initially, I, coming from a farm, actually milking cows, to be honest about it, I took my doctoral degree in nutrition, and focused on what we tended to think was important in those days, namely that animal protein was probably one of the most revered of all nutrients. And my work actually in those early days was focused on also the idea that the good old American diet was about as good as it gets. And so I started out my career from that perspective, and not only in my own research, but also in my teaching. But then during the years, I learned a perspective that I never thought I would have come to. It was a perspective almost exactly the opposite. I had a big research program during all those years. It was funded by the National Institutes of Health for the most part. And I published extensively in the very best journals. And eventually got to a point where not only had we done a lot of laboratory-based experimental research, but also we got involved in doing some big human studies, the most notable of which was the big study in rural China, human study, of course. And so we had an opportunity finally to take a look at what we had done in the laboratory and compare it with what we were observing in a human population. And at that particular point in time, I really became impressed with the idea that nutrition was a very exciting topic. It wasn't understood. I felt that I had something to say about what I thought it really was. So I sat down in 2002, actually, with my youngest son, who's now finished medical school, to write a book called The China Study. And the book is essentially, in some ways, it's sort of like a chronology of my own learning experience for those past many years. And that book was published in 2005. And now, of course, it's going into almost the 60 years, so it's really done extremely well. And I am quite excited about the idea that I've learned something about nutrition that hasn't really been recognized before. And what I guess has bothered me over the years, both teaching in this field and also spending about 20 years in the policy arena, helping to develop national policy on food and health. But what I learned and became very much and acutely aware of during these past many years is that nutrition is a very confusing topic for the public, first off. And secondly, that the professions, and I'm talking about my own profession and research, medical research, as well as the clinical profession, these two professional professions, if you will, these really haven't taken nutrition seriously and don't understand really what it is. Medical schools don't teach this subject. There's not one in the country that really teaches nutrition.
Which I think is pretty amazing, Dr. Campbell. It seems like it would be a given.
Well, they don't do it. And, of course, that actually was an incentive for me to write the book, too, because doctors really haven't been trained in this area. But at the same time, I should say that in medical research, the same holds true, too. And I'm referring specifically to the National Institutes of Health, from whom I received very generous amounts of funding for many years, primarily working in the area of experimental cancer development, but also being involved in nutrition, too. But in any case, the National Institutes of Health, a plural word or phrase, is made up of 27 institutes and centers and programs, and not one is named the Institute of Nutrition, or I should say being focused on nutrition. That is really amazing. So here we have a society in the professions, and of course this comes across to the public without their knowing it. We don't do serious research in nutrition. Don't give it the attention that it deserves, first. And secondly, our practitioners don't get trained in the field. So, I wrote the book, as I say, with my son, and tried to elaborate what I thought I had come to know. And took the position of not preaching or proselytizing, but rather just to tell what I thought. I mean, let the chips fall where they may, just tell what we learned and the kind of evidence we got, and let the reader decide for themselves whether they like the idea or not. And what has happened since then, and I've learned this too, also from giving more than 300 lectures now, many to medical schools and medical conferences, what I've learned is that when people try this idea for themselves, this is the biggest story of all, basically. they get amazing benefits, amazing health benefits, and benefits that can be lasting as long as they continue to do it. And so I'm quite frankly excited about, you know, what this subject can mean for the health of the country, for health of individuals, as well as for the health of the planet, I should say. And so the implications of this story are huge, very broad-ranging. And that's what the book is about. Incidentally, I should also point out, too, that the name of the book is called The China Study, which unfortunately is not the title that we had suggested to our publisher, but a publisher who was, I think, a little bit skittish about publishing the book in the first place wanted to put that label on it because he thought he wasn't sure the book would sell, and he wanted to make sure that title had a little bit of cachet to it, so he wanted to include that. We went along with it because we, too, also wanted to get the book published. But so the book's title is The China Study, but in reality, of the 18 chapters in the book, only one is devoted to the project that we actually did in China.
Right.
And that project that we did in China, it was very important. It was unique. It was kind of, I say sometimes, the capstone of my career because we got enough information from China to essentially support.
Right.
What I had learned. You
know, Dr. Campbell, we're going to take a break, and in our next segment, maybe you can explain to our listeners more about what you learned in doing the China study. You are listening to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. We will be right back.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh, and when the sun is out, something I can laugh about. I feel good.
I'm Carol Gravet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now and a certified life coach. And I'd love to share an amazing adventure with you. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. I invite you to join me for a trip of a lifetime to swim with the dolphins. This all-inclusive trip is really a trip of a lifetime. To find out more, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email Carol at carol@coachwithcarol.com. Hi everyone, this is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Acira bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We are here with Dr. Colin Campbell, the author of the best-selling book, The China Study. Dr. Campbell, you were talking to us about how you got into the book and some changes that you found that the American diet that we thought was perfect wasn't quite so. Perhaps you could tell us, what have you found to be the most healthy diet for the human?
Yeah, basically, I think the optimum diet is a whole foods, plant-based diet, vegetables, fruits, grains, legumes. And I emphasize the word whole food. I'm not talking about taking the parts out of those plants like sugar and fat and white flour and things like that and making a donut. I'm talking about, you know, the whole foods, essentially. A diet of that kind, we'd like to think referred to as a dietary lifestyle. Because really it's more of one of a lifestyle, it's not really a diet. But nonetheless, as we put that food together, I believe, should not be adding added oil or fat or sugar. Those cause us a lot of problems. And so as we put the diet together and used herbs and spices for flavors and other sorts of things, we end up with a diet very tasty. And that diet is one that is rich in antioxidants, thousands of different kinds of antioxidants, of course. It's also got the right kind and the right amount of protein in particular. It's got an array of enormous variety of complex carbohydrates and the right amount of fat, I should say, as well. So from the nutritional perspective, from my perspective, being in this field for as long as I've been, the levels of nutrients that are provided by that kind of diet are virtually at the optimum level.
You mentioned the right kind of protein. What were your findings on protein?
Yeah, I referred to that initially, saying that, you know, I focused on protein as far as my doctoral research is concerned. And what I meant by that was that I assumed that protein was extremely important, and it is. It's an important nutrient. But what we learned early on, after I spent about 10 years coordinating a project in the Philippines working with malnourished children, what we learned sort of accidentally in some ways was that when we consume protein in excess of what we need, and by excess, the amount we need actually is at most around 8 to 10% of total calories. But when we consume protein in excess of that, usually in the form of consuming animal-based foods, it turns on cancer. And specifically, what the kind of experiment that we did many, many times over a period of 27 years, actually, the kind of protein we were using that caused this problem was the main protein, cow's milk. And that's why I pointed out it was from the dairy farm initially, and I found that a little bit surprising and shocking and almost unbelievable. But when we, in our experimental studies, sort of fed to experimental animals this particular case, casein in excess of the amount that was needed, it was a very powerful promoter of cancer development. And we got to a point, actually, in our studies that we could turn on and turn off cancer by just adjusting the level of this level of protein. When we fed plant protein, in contrast, it did not do that. It was an animal protein.
And so,
so that was striking.
Was that linked to the increase in the body's acidity when too much protein was consumed?
Yes. I mean, when we consume protein in excess, as I say, of what we need, that's the amount that's provided by whole plant-based foods. When we consume in excess, a number of things happen. It's not just one thing. It's just almost countless things. And increasing the acidity in body is one of those things, because that in turn affects a variety of different enzyme functions. But there's a whole lot of other things, too. It had been shown some years before us, and we repeated it too, that when animal-based protein like casein is fed in that fashion, it increases blood cholesterol levels pretty dramatically. And starts off the whole heart disease process. It associates with, because of its acidity in the blood as one mechanism, it associates with higher levels of osteoporosis. So that, in effect, as we increase foods containing, let's say, calcium and animal protein, namely dairy, the higher the consumption of those nutrients, the higher the consumption of that food, dairy, the greater is the risk for osteoporosis. Exactly the opposite. Mm. What we have been told for all these years. And so, and unfortunately, however you want to look at it, we just kept discovering one thing after another that would be labeled as heresy, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, when we put it all together, it was just pretty amazing.
It's interesting that you mentioned that the dairy does cause osteoporosis, because I always found it puzzling that America, in the U.S., we had the highest levels of osteoporosis, one of the highest levels in the world, and yet we consume the most dairy products.
That's correct. That obviously is an important observation. It doesn't necessarily prove the dairy causes it, but we can get around to making that point, though, by looking at the way in which it works, and it all fits together, really.
Yes, Dr. Campbell, speaking of osteoporosis, how, you know, I get asked that question from time to time. You know, if you're not drinking milk, how do you get your calcium? Don't you worry about osteoporosis? So what can you say to that?
Well, the reason people ask that question is because the recommendations for calcium consumption have been set artificially high. And that's another whole story. The Dietary Guidelines Committee for years and other sort of bodies basically set nutrient recommendations that unfortunately have been biased in favor of the current American diet and tend to encourage our doing the same thing that we're doing now, which is the wrong thing. So the calcium recommendation was set too high, and of course that in part relates to the fact that the bodies that are involved in making those recommendations have been heavily influenced by the dairy industry.
Right.
That's the issue. And so people then end up worrying about where am I going to get my calcium from? And obviously the answer that everybody, that the industry wants us to say is consume more milk. That's nonsense.
Right. So it's a promotion for purposes of just promoting the dairy industry. So right. What do you recommend for people for osteoporosis?
I say, as I said before, you know, higher consumption of animal protein-based foods leads to more acidity, which in turn has to be buffered by the body, and it does so by taking the calcium out of the bones. So that being the case, I say that what people should be doing is consuming a plant-based diet. And there's plenty of calcium in whole food, plant, you know, based foods, whole grains and legumes and greens. They've got enough calcium, plenty of calcium. In fact, they have the ideal level of calcium. And at the same time, they don't. We don't end up, you know, consuming all the protein that's going to cause the calcium to be lost.
Does excess protein from animals, does that also deplete calcium further? I think I read that somewhere. Is that right? I don't even know if you would know that.
Well, that's what I said. I think
okay.
You may have been.
You just said that. Okay. Sorry, I was just thinking of the question.
I thought it was interesting, too, about some of the studies you did around macular degeneration.
Right.
And
Actually, we didn't do those studies. In the book, of course, we talked about...
Right, you spoke about... Can you speak a little bit about that, briefly?
Yeah, I mean, the work that we did in my laboratory over the years was largely focused on cancer and a few other conditions related to cancer. So when we wrote the book, and because I had become aware of this over the years, we also wanted to talk about, we wanted to look at the question concerning the effect of this kind of food on other diseases as well. And I had the advantage of getting to know some physicians who were doing some remarkable things, not because of me, they came up with it on their own, who were doing things like reversing and curing heart disease in fairly advanced stages. Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn at the Cleveland Clinic did remarkable studies. Dr. Dean Ornish, of course, is known by many people, did some studies of that sort a little earlier on. And then there's Dr. John McDougall, Dr. Neil Bernard. You know, these are all MDs, all practicing physicians who, in their case, could stop type 2 diabetes using the same formula. So, I was aware of that. So when we wrote the book, coming back to your question, macular degeneration, I wanted to know, how far-reaching is this thing? Beyond cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, and so forth. And lo and behold, you can find in the literature an awful lot of information that has been published, and it's just been ignored, which is another whole story in itself. One of the really exciting dimensions of the story is the fact that this kind of diet not only prevents a large variety of different kinds of diseases, but actually now can be used to actually treat people who have been diagnosed with these diseases.
Right. One of your principles was that the same nutrition that prevents disease in its early stages can also halt or reverse diseases in its later stages. So that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yes. And, you know, when you stop and think about that, at least for me, when I start to think about it, over the years, we talked a lot about preventive medicine, which never gets much attention in medical training and medical schools. And it's almost the word is a good showcase word, but it doesn't mean anything much because people they don't think too much about what, especially when they're younger, they don't think about what thesis they might get later in life, and so never the idea never goes very far. But what really is interesting about this diet is that, as I said, it can be used to treat the diseases already present. Now, that gets into the medical domain. That means, I mean, that's what medicine, practice medicine is all about, is treating people with symptoms. And so the best way to do that is switch them over to this kind of diet. And okay. That's what my physician friends are doing, and it's fantastic.
Dr. Gerson, I was just thinking of Charlotte Gerson, Dr. Campbell. Are you familiar with the Gerson therapy?
Yes, I am, and I've met Charlotte. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She's been a lifetime devoted to this topic that was started with by her late father.
Right. We had her as a guest on our show also.
Yeah, she's a terrific lady.
Yeah. So.
And they've done just great things. And unfortunately, over the years, that practice has been denigrated and ridiculed, unfortunately, far too much by the establishment.
Right. Right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to take a brief break. You are listening to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. We will be back in a few minutes.
Hi, folks. My name is Guy Harold, and my family has been in the surgical stainless steel cookware business for 63 years. I am a value dealer. I sell for less. The cookware is used by Gearson and Price Pottinger, people around the world. Why? Our steel is non-reactive, non-porous, and is correct for your cooking needs. The temperature gauge knob tells you when the texture of produce and minimizes plant cell breakage, saving up to 48.9% more nutritional food value. The cookware has a lifetime warranty. No aluminum, no coatings, no cast iron, no ceramic, and no glass. Nothing to break or wear out. And you can stack cook up to 3 tiers high, saving you energy as well as food value. Call the Cookware Guy at 760-505-7057 or visit our website at www.stainlesscookware4u.com. That's stainlesscookware4u.com.
I'm Carol Gravet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now and a certified life coach. And I'd love to share an amazing adventure with you. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. I invite you to join me for a trip of a lifetime to swim with the dolphins. This all-inclusive trip is really a trip of a lifetime. To find out more, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email Carol at carol@coachwithcarol.com.
Are you experiencing depression, anxiety, anger, or low self-esteem? Do you find yourself sabotaging what you really want to achieve? Jeannie Smith at Open Heart Healing can help you work through these issues to allow joy and quality back into your life. Jeannie has over 10 years of experience as a Gestalt therapist and Tai Chi practitioner, and her office is here in Castle Rock on South Perry Street. Jeannie works with adults, couples, and adolescents. Call for a free consultation at 303-660-6373. Again, that's 303-660-6373.
Singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We've been talking with Dr. Colin Campbell, author of the best-selling book, The China Study. And Matt, I think you had a question you wanted to ask.
Dr. Campbell, we know from Charlotte Gerson that you have to be careful in this country about saying what you can do to treat certain diseases. And, you know, in her case, coming out and saying that the Gerson therapy is a method for treating cancer is something that she cannot legally go across that line. Have you come across any resistance, any legal trouble basically in promoting the message that food can be medicine?
No, I haven't. I'm careful to point out as often as I possibly can that I am not a physician. And if people ask me, you know, about their own condition, I'm, as I say, it's always the first thing I say. In fact, it's, I guess I'm so well known for saying that people say to me, I know you're not an MD and so forth and so on, but they'd like to know. So in any case, what I do describe is what I am responsible to do, and that's to describe my interpretation of the scientific evidence. And having been in the field, as I say, for more than a half century, I think that is my responsibility. And I will say things, obviously, that you know, are not pleasant for, let's say, the profession, the medical profession in particular, to hear. But they haven't said anything to me. In fact, as I say, they've begun to embrace my speaking to them. It's all great fun. I mean, last year, I just could point out, there were three new medical schools in the United States, and I was the inaugural speaker in two of them. So I'm not concerned about, you know, they're raising these kind of questions.
Well, that's great that you're so widely accepted in the medical field. That's a pretty big giant that is pretty resistant to change.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm well accepted. I mean, a lot of people, of course, have challenged what I say, but at least now there are institutions, many institutions and many individuals, you know, who are certainly interested in hearing my views. And so I end up actually having given several keynotes at conventions and things like that, and I'm going to continue to give that kind of presentation.
But you were met with opposition by corporations, correct?
Oh, yes. I have had my share, to say the least. And, the dairy industry is not very happy with me. They haven't been for quite a long time. Again, I'm only talking about the results we've gotten, and people can decide for themselves and see what results they get. So they haven't been happy and have done some pretty, I would say, unsavory kinds of things. Other industries, too, aren't very happy with what I say. Seems like this idea. Yeah, of course. And it seems like this message is sort of confronting a number of institutions that we have in this country we've got to deal with as a society. I mean, what I say confronts the pharmaceutical industry as well. But in that particular case, too, I found it interesting, one of the former governors of one of our states, wartime governor actually, made arrangements for me to speak to pharmaceutical company executives, which I did. And I was very candid and saying, you know, they probably wouldn't like what I was talking about because I'm talking about using diet instead of drugs, you know, to maintain health. And what was interesting about that is after the talk, I mean, for the most part, a lot of silence, but there were some that came up to me after the talk and said, were they to be able to do their career again, they'd like to work in the area I'm working in.
Wow.
And then even with the genetics field, I mean, our research confronts what the geneticists tend to believe, namely that if we can identify which gene causes which kind of disease, we'll be able to control that disease. Well, I just plain out say that's nonsense. I mean, all these diseases and other physiological events, they all begin with genes for the most part. But their final outcome is not dependent on genes. In other words, it's really about genes getting expressed or not getting expressed, and that's the domain of nutrition. So again, you know, talking to genetics groups, I get that kind of backbiting. There's not too many. Well, there obviously, you know, I don't want to focus on all these negative things, but I certainly have. I have certainly seen that, you know, in spades.
How about, have you had much opposition to just the diet itself from the general public?
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of people who are really, almost as a religion, are devoted to the kind of food they eat. And for the most part, of course, that's food that I say we ought not to eat, or at least I don't take the evidence to agrees with that. people who just love their meat, love their dairy, love their eggs. I mean, there's some of those people have become extraordinarily hostile. Unfortunately, in that case, I have taken them on to some extent, because too many of those people almost essentially are pretended to be scientists or not. At least they portray themselves to the public as being scientists and they're not. I know they're, you know, devoted to their food, either for maybe for commercial reasons or for just personal reasons, or because they actually did it. You know, they have consumed that kind of food. I'm going to have to go along with them. I mean, they say they make some gains in their health, and I say, well, fine. But if that's true, if they're saying what they're true, it's not the long-lasting kind of thing. It's not the solution to our health care problems.
Right, so, which we can take a look at, you know, the state of the health in this country right now and take a look at the way a lot of Americans are eating. And the bottom line, Dr. Campbell, is it's not working.
No, it's not working. And, you know, one of the really sad things that we've all watched for the past year or two is this great debate on the health care problems we have in health care reform in particular. And what I became really disenchanted with is the fact that as that debate went forward from both sides of the political aisle, everybody was mostly talking about who's going to pay the bill. And we're not talking about, you know, saving in health care costs by actually making people well. And I have some plans, in fact, by which I just simply want to do, you know, the kind of study that would, I'm sure, resonate with the public, showing what can be done in a very practical way by which people can actually try this and sustain their behavior change.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea, I realize it confronts the existing system. But no one seems to want to really talk about it. Or I say no one, but I mean, I'm talking about the people in power. They don't want to talk about that.
Right.
We're talking about a huge industry here involving the insurance industry, the drug industry, the medical industry itself, and so forth and so on. You know, that I guess they're happy with where they are. They're making lots of money.
Right.
That's
probably not going to change unless the demands or the lifestyle of the public changes, which is what you're trying
yes.
to do. Have you, you said you transitioned over into this diet, you know, over a few years. Do you have any suggestions for people trying to change their diet that might not know how to do it?
Right. You're right. I mean, we were just like everyone else, and especially if I haven't come from the farm. We ate lots of meat, milk, and eggs, and all that sort of thing. And so we gradually started to change as I became more and more familiar with the evidence that we were producing. And when I say we, I'm talking about my wife and I and our five children now grown and now our five grandchildren. We all eat the same way. For my wife and I, we sort of did that over a period of about 10 years, I guess. Just gradually started to change and one thing at a time. And finally, it went the whole way about 10 years later, which was now about 1989, 1990. And one of the things about this that's really quite interesting and is supported by science is the fact that if people who are accustomed to consuming the typical American diet, high in protein and fat and meat and eggs and dairy, you know, if they suddenly all of a sudden want to change and they start using a plant-based diet, they find it a little bit bland, and they may not stay with it, especially in the kind of environment that does not tend to support that. But what people don't realize is that we're all accustomed to our taste. Our taste preferences, you know, have been fashioned over many years before. And to make a switch like that really quickly, the new food is not going to taste exactly the same. The reason for that is that we've become addicted to high consumption of fat, sugar, and salt in particular. Mm-hmm. And high fat intake is just like any other chemical addiction. It causes change in brain chemistry. And once you become addicted, to suddenly go to a low-fat, low-salt, low-sugar diet, or plant-based, it's not the most pleasant thing in the world for many people. But if they just have a little persistence and hang around with it for a month or two or three, everything changes.
Mm-hmm.
And once it changes, they start then consuming foods and discovering new tastes. And then they don't want to go back. But that's the problem. People try it, and they don't stand it long enough, and they don't want to do it well enough to really experience the real benefits.
Well, it's like anything else. If you just jump into it and it's such a huge change. It's kind of like people who go on diets, you know.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's kind of a similar energy there. So,
one of the most common complaints about people trying out a vegetarian or vegan diet is that they don't feel full. They don't get the same satiative feeling that they get from a heavy meal of meat. And
that's true. But keep in mind, I mean, they have that feeling because their body has become accustomed to getting full, if you will, and presenting a certain kind of feeling based on, you know, what they have been eating. And at first, they may not get that same kind of satiation. In a sense, they certainly can feel full, but they won't. But then they may get hungry a little bit later, and there's some people will complain about that. But that'll change too.
I fully agree with that. I've seen that in my own diet. What makes me feel full now is completely different than what it did 2 years ago.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. You know what the story is. Yeah.
A lot of people will really use a lot of soy in a vegetarian vegan diet, and I know that some people are concerned about the amount of hormones that they're getting. We may not have time in this segment to get into this topic, but what is your point of view on soy, using soy for protein?
Well, it's good. I mean, so the soybean, just like other legumes, is a very good food, I'm not concerned at all with the question concerning hormonal activity. That's the level of so-called phytoestrogens, as we call them, or hormone-like substances in soy. When we're consuming the whole food, that level of those so-called hormones or hormone-like substances is so low that it's actually, in effect, probably helpful because it tends to block the activity of the estrogens, for example, that are already present in our bodies.
Oh, so it's a different type. Undeveloped
type of
estrogen? Okay.
Right. Yeah, but what we should not do is consume really soy in excess, especially soy enriched products. I think we're doing too much of that.
Dr. Campbell, I have another question about soy, but we'll have to go to break first. So you are listening to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. We'll be right back with Dr. Colin Campbell of the China Study.
Sing the song of love, Julia.
Are you seeking understanding and assistance in healing your depression and anger or lack of passion? Hi, my name is Tammy Urbanik at Empowerment Through Healing, and I'm a medium clairvoyant who can work with your spirit guides to assist you. Your spirit guides can offer solutions and understanding at current life issues that you're facing. Visit www.empowermentthroughhealing.com for more information, and you can call me at 719-641-2017.
Hi, I'm Karen Cantrell. I'm an animal whisperer. I have the ability to connect with the energy of your animals. During our session, you will gain a valuable understanding of what the animal is experiencing and why, the ways that you can assist them, and also discover the information and support your animals desire to share with you to assist you on your own healing path. For more information, visit my website, healinganimalwhisperer.com. Or give me a call at 303-974-1978.
Hi, I'm Carol Gravet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now and a certified life coach. And I'd love to share an amazing adventure with you. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. I invite you to join me for a trip of a lifetime to swim with the dolphins. This all-inclusive trip is really a trip of a lifetime. To find out more, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email Carol at carol@coachwithcarol.com.
I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering where it will go.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We have as our guest today Dr. Colin Campbell of the China Study. And we have been talking with him in our last segment a little bit about soy protein and soy in general. And Dr. Campbell, I have a question. How do you, speaking of soy, how do you feel about the genetically engineered soy, which from our research, what is it, about 90%?
Yeah,
Matt, that is
90-95%.
90-95% of all soy is genetically engineered. How do you feel about that?
I'm not a fan. To be blunt about it, I just
great. You know, we aren't either.
We one of the things about this experiment using genetically modified foods is that the downside of that, the adverse health effects that might occur, are not likely to be seen for maybe some years.
Right.
We can't do the kind of experiments that we ought to be doing before we ever even introduce those kinds of foods. And if in reality or if in due course we all of a sudden discover, hey, we got a problem here, maybe 10, 20, 30 years down the road, by that time, it's much too late. And so incidentally, modifying food in that fashion, changing a gene or two or three for whatever purpose, it gives no attention, you know, to the alteration and the long-term health effects of that food.
Right, and there's a reason why other countries have outlawed genetically modified food.
Right. I mean, I think it's a huge risk that we're taking to go down this road. I mean, the companies will advertise, will argue that we need to feed the poor of the world, and we need to find ways to increase production, so forth and so on. I don't buy that. That's not sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're what they're doing are marketing their product and making arguments like that. There's other ways. I worked for the first 10 years of my career, as a matter of fact, coordinating a program of feeding malnourished children in the Philippines. So I don't speak with total ignorance. I know what it's like in those countries that, you know, need food. And one of the best things to do in a case like that is to help them to be able to grow the kind of food that they can grow, you know, locally, number one. And that can be done. And secondly, to let them know that they can maintain health and keep health, even in the absence of doctors. And that's often happens in countries like that. They're always concerned, especially mothers concerned about the fact they don't have any doctors and they don't realize what food can do for them. So they've been kept in the dark. And all of a sudden to come back and now argue that, you know, we need to make, you know, millions of tons of genetically modified soy protein, for example, for those countries, that's silly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we are really against is the lack of labeling that's on a lot of the products. I mean, they don't have to label that it's genetically engineered. So the public is really not well informed. That's one of the reasons why we do this show. Because we want to inform the public. So, since this is our last segment, tell us a little bit more about maybe some of the results, some stories from people that have had some really significant advances in their health following your diet. Do you have any stories you want to share with us?
Well, I could. It's more than 1,000 now. To be specific about it, I mean,
we don't have time for that many, but give us a few.
But you know, routinely, what happens is that people who sometimes have problems and don't quite realize it yet, they yet have a problem. In other words, their cholesterol levels may be high, their sugar levels may be high, and so forth and so on. They're not diagnosed with anything, but when they start eating this way, all of a sudden, you know, their cholesterol really drops like a rock, and blood sugar goes down, triglycerides go down, and so forth, and they feel better. And that's routine. That's routine with virtually everyone. But then there are also, you know, people who had cancer or had heart disease, and who are diagnosed with their type 2 diabetes, and they go on this, and they get these remarkable turnarounds. Incidentally, those are people telling me their stories. I'm not, as I said, a physician treating those people. But I also learned from my physician friends, the ones I mentioned before, that, you know, who do treat patients that way. And that's what they see. I mean, that's just what they see. It's clear. It's not even a debatable point anymore. you know, the gains in health that people can experience when they do this.
Yeah.
Virtually everyone, regardless what their condition is.
I understand you briefly mentioned when we spoke the other day about an interview with President Clinton on CNN.
Yeah, I mean, President Clinton has had a book for a couple of years, and I'd heard stories. After he got it, he wrote me a handwritten note back, thanked me, and so forth and so on. But I wasn't aware that he had done anything particularly with it until the recent wedding, and he looked remarkably better, and people wanted to know what he was up to. And so he started telling people about it. Somebody who knows well what was going on told me about his enthusiasm for a book. And so I'd heard that story, and then suddenly he was on CNN just here a week ago or so and been interviewed by Wolf Blitzer, who asked him point blank, you know, how did you gain your health? And he specifically mentioned our book, The China Study, was the only book that he did mention, although he also mentioned two physicians, two cardiologists, you know, which is, of course, his own specific problem. He mentioned my friends, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Dr. Dean Ornish. And that was very exciting. I mean, for President Clinton to be so bold, to have so much courage to go out and actually say that he achieved this by not consuming dairy. What a remark.
Mm-hmm. I have several members of my family who have followed your diet and have, you know, I'm not totally vegan, although I may go there. I'm pretty close. But, you know, I still do some eggs and a little bit of chicken. But I think I'm almost ready to take that leap and try it in the first several months and see how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty much what you say in the book, you know, that it's just beneficial to try it and see how you feel.
Exactly. That's the final answer. We can talk about mechanisms and data and so forth and so on all day long. People can argue about it, to be honest about it. But the bottom line is, what happens to a person who actually does it?
Right.
I was wondering, too, though, some people that have been on a vegan diet for years and years end up having energy problems, and that's probably about B12. And that's something that we can't get through, as far as I'm aware.
That may be true. I think the jury's out a little bit on that. And mm-hmm. I go along with my physician colleagues and the idea that, you know, people like that should take B12 supplements for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, when I put my scientific hat on and look at the data, I just can't seem to come up with
It's not really about that.
Mm-hmm. It really proves that point. But energy, you know, on the other hand, you know, people, you're saying about not feeling energetic enough. One of the problems with vegans, by the way, is that they actually end up consuming too much fat and too much processed foods. So, you know, an awful lot of vegans are not very well because they're not eating the kind of diet I'm talking about.
They're just not eating meat, but they're not necessarily eating whole plant-based foods. Yeah.
Exactly. They're eating too much of the pastas and white flour products and too much oil. And they're staying away from animal foods, of course, by nature. But, you know, that's not going to achieve very good health for an awful lot of people.
Dr. Campbell, do you have any more studies going on right now that you want to talk about
thanks for asking. There's two things. I have a foundation that has been run by some former students of mine and colleagues where we actually have a course called Plant-Based Nutrition that we're going to be offering continuing medical education credits here very shortly, but it's been extremely successful. Doctors and healthcare workers have taken the course, and it's done in conjunction with the company owned by Cornell University, who actually does the online courses for Cornell faculty. That foundation name is in my name, tcolincampbell.org, and people can go there and sign up for the course. That's one thing.
Oh, that's an online course.
Yes, an online course. I should say it's a unique online course. There's really nothing like it. It's based on lectures that I gave at Cornell and some other... My colleagues, they give lectures there, too. And people who enroll in that course, they get a certificate for it, too, from eCornell, for if they do the courses, complete the package. And the discussions that go on online are just terrific, absolutely terrific. And it's monitored by our teaching assistants, all of whom are professionally trained. It's a nice deal. And the other thing that I mentioned earlier, I have been wanting to get a demonstration project going. It costs some money. And so I'm out working with my sons, plural. I wanted to do this demonstration study, which by the standards of the day, sounds like a lot of money that we're looking for. I'm not on your program to try to proselytize people raising money, but I just want to mention that's what we're doing. And you know, the point I want to make is that we spend huge amounts of money developing drugs. The latest figures I saw is $1.7 billion per drug in this country.
Wow.
We only need one one-thousandth of that to demonstrate what we want to do. And we've got something that I really am very excited about that can actually transform our healthcare system. And it's done in a way in which it's grassroots. Mm-hmm. I don't want to depend on the authorities of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go in from the top. I've worked at the top for a long time. You can't work from the top down. It's just impossible because the top is too much controlled by the corporate sector.
Right.
So what we have in mind is working from the bottom up, you know, where people can look at it, try it. If they like it, they can continue, and I just know they'll like it.
Great.
And they'll continue. So that's what I'm talking about.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Campbell. This has just been a fascinating hour. I wish we had more time because we could continue this conversation. The book is called The China Study, and you can get it on Amazon or anywhere. I think, doesn't Whole Foods sponsor your book also?
Yes.
Okay.
They do.
Yeah, so you can get it, you know, you can find it anywhere. It's pretty mainstream. Thank you so much. And I want to just say one more thing for our listeners, that we are always looking for high integrity people who want to sponsor us or companies. And if you'd like more information about what we do, you can go to foodintegritynow.org. And we have a media kit on that site, or you can email us at info@foodintegritynow.org. Thank you for listening. Next week, we will have Lono on. Lono is a Hawaiian kahuna, but he is also an expert on water. And he's going to be talking about the state of the water in this country. And especially if you live in the Front Range area, you won't want to miss this show. Thank you so much. This is Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. Talk to you next week.
I don't know why. Nobody told me.